thing, and the picture constantly changing. On top of that, they had to enforce neutrality laws, which meant trying to prevent U.S. citizens from getting involved in the fighting.
Exactly. And that was no easy task. Think about it. You've got a porous border, a conflict spilling over onto U.S. territory, and a population with divided loyalties. The BI had to walk this tightrope, trying to uphold the law, while also navigating the sensitivities of U.S. foreign policy and public opinion. It was the diplomatic minefield.
And all of this is happening while Europe is like marching towards World War I. So there's this backdrop of global tension, uncertainty, just adding to the pressure.
Oh, absolutely. The world was on the brink of a major conflict. And in many ways, the BI was on the front lines of this emerging global struggle. They had to quickly develop expertise in areas like counterintelligence, espionage, and sabotage investigations, skills that would become even more critical when the U.S. eventually entered the war.
It sounds like. They were laying the groundwork for the modern FBI, even before the agency officially adopted that name. So who was leading the BI during this tumultuous time? Was it still Stanley Finch, the micromanager extraordinaire?
Finch was still the chief. But his deputy, A. Bruce Bulaski, was really emerging as a key figure. He was a lawyer by training and brought a sharp legal mind to the BI. But more importantly, he had this vision for the agency's future. Bulaski understood that the world was changing. National security threats were becoming more complex and interconnected. He saw the BI as more than just a crime-fighting organization. He envisioned it as a vital component of national security, a proactive force safeguarding the nation's interests, both at home and abroad.
That's a pretty bold vision, especially for that era. It sounds like he was anticipating the need for a more sophisticated intelligence apparatus long before most people were even thinking about those things.
He was definitely ahead of his time. And he wasn't just a visionary. He was a doer. Under his leadership, the BI expanded its operations, recruited new talent with specialized skills, linguists, code breakers, analysts, and invested in new technologies for gathering and analyzing information. He was essentially building the infrastructure for a modern intelligence agency, brick by brick.
It's like he was building the plane while flying it and all of this, while navigating the political complexities of a nation on the verge of war. That takes a special kind of leadership. So Bulaski steps into this leadership role and starts transforming the BI. How did the public react to these changes? Were they supportive of the BI's expanding role, or were there concerns about government overreach?
Well, as you can imagine, public opinion was divided. Some people applauded the BI's efforts to protect the nation from threats both foreign and domestic. Others, though, were wary of the agency's growing power and concerned about potential abuses. It was a classic debate about balancing security and liberty, a debate that continues to this day.
It's a debate that's woven into the very fabric of American democracy, and it's fascinating to see how it played out in those early days of the BI. So the BI is evolving, taking on more responsibilities, becoming more powerful. How did this impact their relationship with other government agencies? Was there any friction or competition?
Oh, there was, definitely. Some jostling for position.
Yes.
And turf wars, especially with agencies like the Secret Service and the Military Intelligence Division. I mean, intelligence gathering is a competitive business, even within the government. But Bulaski understood that collaboration was crucial, especially as the U.S. edged closer to war. He worked to build relationships, establish clear lines of communication, and share information with other agencies, recognizing that a unified front was essential for national security.
That's a valuable lesson in leadership, knowing when to collaborate, even with rivals, for the greater good. It's something we could all learn from.
Speaking of war, the U.S. did eventually enter World War I in 1917. How did that impact the BI? Did they finally get the recognition and resources they needed? Well, the U.S. entering the war was definitely a turning point for the BI. They were thrust into the center of the war effort, playing a critical role in counterintelligence, espionage, and sabotage investigations. They had to deal with this massive influx of information, separate fact from fiction, and identify credible threats, all while operating under intense pressure.
That sounds overwhelming. How did they manage to handle such a massive increase in their workload?
They had to adapt, and quickly. They ramped up their recruitment efforts, bringing in experts in languages, code breaking, and signals intelligence. They developed new systems for processing and analyzing information, relying on a combination of traditional detective work and cutting-edge technology. It was a trial by fire, but it also proved that the BI was capable of handling even the most demanding national security challenges.
So Bielaski's vision of the BI as a leading intelligence agency was really realized during the war. They had come a long way from chasing down land grabbers and investigating bank fraud.
Absolutely. By the end of World War I, the BI had established itself as a key player in national security. They had honed their skills, built a network of informants, and proven their ability to operate effectively on a global stage.
What an incredible journey, from a makeshift group of detectives to a sophisticated intelligence agency playing a crucial role in a global war. And to think, this is all before J. Edgar Hoover even steps onto the scene.
It really does challenge the traditional narrative of the FBI's history. The agency's roots run much deeper than most people realize.
So where do we go from here? Did Bielaski stay on as chief after the war, continuing to guide the BI through this period of growth and transformation?
Actually, no. Bielaski resigned in 1919, leaving the BI at kind of a pivotal moment. His departure created a leadership vacuum and left the agency vulnerable to a whole new set of challenges, challenges that would ultimately pave the way for the rise of J. Edgar Hoover.
Well, that's a great cliffhanger. I'll have to dive into all of that. In part three of our deep dive into the FBI's surprising origins, we're back and ready to wrap up our deep dive into the wild early days of the FBI. We've seen how this agency went from like a tiny group of detectives to a major player in national security, dealing with espionage, neutrality laws, even the Mexican Revolution. But now, we're getting to a really interesting part. The years between when A. Bruce Bielaski left and the rise of, you know, the guy who basically became the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah, this is a period that's often overlooked.
Yeah.
But it's super important. Bielaski left some big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
And the guys that came after him, they face a whole bunch of challenges all at once. Budget cuts, political pressure, conflicts within the BI itself, and even corruption, like a wave of it that threatened to undo all the progress they've made.
It's almost like a Shakespearean tragedy. You have this incredible growth and innovation under Bielaski, and then boom, it all kind of falls apart. What happened?
Yeah.
Was it Bielaski leaving that caused this, or were there bigger things going on?
It's probably a combination of things. Bielaski was a strong leader. He had a clear vision. But the guys who came after him, they just didn't have the same skills. They couldn't keep the funding coming in or handle the political pressures.
Hmm.
And the BI itself was still growing and changing. It was a tough time.
So you've got this leadership vacuum at the top. And at the same time, the BI is trying to figure out what it's supposed to be. We talked earlier about that tension between regular law enforcement and intelligence work. Did that become a bigger problem during this time?
Yeah, definitely. Without Bielaski there to guide them,
yeah,
the BI was pulled in different directions. Some agents wanted to stick to crimes like fraud and theft. They thought intelligence work was too risky and not really what the BI should be doing. But others thought the BI's future was in national security. They wanted to be more proactive in finding and stopping threats, both from inside and outside the U.S.
It's like they were trying to be two different things at once, a crime-fighting agency and an intelligence agency. And without a clear vision, it's no wonder they struggled. You mentioned corruption, too. What was going on there?
Well, there was an increase in misconduct, partly because of the weak leadership and the lack of clear rules. Some agents were accused of taking bribes, using their position for personal gain, even committing crimes themselves. It was a huge betrayal of the public's trust, and it really hurt the BI's reputation.
Classic case of power corrupting. The BI had a lot of authority after the war, and without strong oversight, it sounds like some people took advantage of that.
Exactly. And these scandals, they were all over the newspapers, which made things even worse. There were calls for reform. The BI was in a real crisis. Its future was totally uncertain. And that's when J. Edgar Hoover comes in.
Perfect timing. The hero arrives to save the day. So Hoover becomes director of the BI in 1924. What did he do first? How did he fix all this?
Hoover was really good at public relations. He knew how important it was to look good. So he tackled the corruption problem right away. He fired agents who were accused of wrongdoing. He put in place stricter rules. And he really stressed professionalism and honesty. He wanted to make the BI look squeaky clean, to get the public back on their side.
Smart move. By dealing with the corruption so directly, he showed everyone he was a strong leader, someone who wouldn't tolerate any bad behavior.
Exactly. He knew how to use symbols and images to his advantage. He also knew the BI needed a clear purpose, a mission that everyone could get behind. He saw the future of the agency in intelligence and national security, and that's the direction he started taking them in.
This is where we see the FBI starting to take shape.
Right.
That focus on national security, the emphasis on intelligence, the whole mysterious image, that's all classic Hoover.
You could say that. Hoover took what Bielaski and others had built, the investigative skills, the intelligence capabilities, the desire to be a major force in the world, and he turned it into the FBI.
It's amazing how much the BI changed in just a few decades. We've gone from a few detectives to an agency dealing with international spies, navigating wartime, and eventually becoming the FBI under Hoover.
It really makes you think differently about the FBI's history.
It shows that even the most powerful institutions start from humble beginnings, and their journey is shaped by all sorts of things. People, politics, world events. It's been a wild ride exploring all of this.
It really has.
And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive into the surprising origins of the FBI. We hope you've enjoyed it and maybe learned something new. Remember, history is full of twists and turns, and even the most well-known institutions have hidden stories waiting to be discovered. So until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep those brain cells buzzing.